Many people with great abilities are hindered in those abilities because they know they have those abilities and they consider themselves to be just a little bit better than everyone else. This is a real serious problem in the church, and it's one of the reasons why we have so many churches today, because somebody thinks that they are so important and their thinking is so important that even the scriptures are not as important as what they think. And Jesus was very concerned about this, and so the first time that the apostles manifested this problem, he took the time to work with them on it. And I like looking over their shoulders, and I like to think about how they dealt with this, and I also like to think about how I need to be dealing with this, and of course, how you do as well. And so what the statement is in Mark chapter 9 is, then he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, what was it you disputed among yourselves on the road? But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. And so humility and pride are set side by side. The apostles are embarrassed. They don't want to tell Jesus because they have an understanding that what they're doing really wouldn't meet with his approval. And so what I'd like to first of all ask is, what do you think they were basing their idea of greatness on? What was it about Peter? What would Peter say to the rest of the apostles? I'm going to be the greatest in the kingdom of God because... And what would he say? And what would John say? And James? And what would all the rest of the apostles, what would they base it on? And I think that one of the things they might base it on is the same thing that Nebuchadnezzar had to deal with. And that is, the king spoke saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Now, Nebuchadnezzar was a great man, there's no doubt about it. But what he missed was, he was great because God made him great. And that's what the apostles were missing out on. It wasn't their abilities. We all have abilities. And some of those abilities are seen as important, and they give us self-esteem. And self-esteem is good. It's good to have something that you can look at and say, I have something to contribute to the Lord's church. I have something to contribute to the Lord. The problem comes in when we take that ability, like Nebuchadnezzar does here, and we say, I'm self-made. I have this greatness because of what I have done, because of what I have. And that's exactly what he says here. And the Lord has a very different view. While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he chooses. So the apostles were missing the fact that whatever they thought made them great was a gift from God. It wasn't something to be boasting about. It wasn't something that would make them greater than anyone else. Same thing with Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar thinks, I'm the greatest individual on earth. I built Babylon by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty. Well, that's wrong, wrong, and wrong. God gave him the abilities he had. God allowed him to conquer the nations. It wasn't his majesty. It wasn't his power. It was God. And that's why it states, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he chooses. So he thought his greatness stemmed from Babylon. But the truth was, God gave it to him. Now, you may at this point be thinking, where are we going with this lesson? What exactly is he trying to get across today? Well, I want to talk a little bit about the truth about greatness. Now, Paul says this in 1 Corinthians. Who made you different from others? Maybe you think you're better looking than everyone else, or smarter than everyone else, or wealthier Maybe we think that we have an ability that no one else has, that we can do things that other people can't do. And that's where Paul's question, where'd you get that? What makes you different from another? And second, what do you have that you didn't receive? Regardless of what we get our self-esteem from. And again, I don't see a problem with self-esteem. The problem, brethren, is basically between self-esteem and the pride of life. The pride of life is of the world. Self-esteem is from God. God gives us the abilities that we have. We're going to talk a little bit later about the ability of an eye to see, about the ability of a mouth to speak, about the ability of the ears to hear and the brain to think. But who made the brain different from the eye, and who made the ear different from the hand? It was all of God. And so the hand should be grateful to God that it can do what it does, and so should the eye, and so should the brain. And so as Paul goes on to say, if you received it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? So as you look at your life, as you look at the things that you can do, and as you look at the things that you can do compared to what other people can do, do we sometimes feel superior? Morally superior, ethically superior, intellectually superior, financially savvy, abilities to do things, better at this, better than that. Everyone is better at something than other people. But that's not the basis upon which the 12 should have been saying, I'm going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven because I can do what you can't do. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar. We have to learn that lesson. We all have to learn that anything that we have, and I appreciated what Rob said in his prayer about that, that we need to learn that we have things to serve others with. And we don't have anything. God created the heavens and the earth. God made us in his image and likeness, and God gave us dominion. Anything I can do is because God gave me and you and all of us the ability to do that. And that's the truth about greatness. Now here's Paul in Romans chapter 12. I say through the grace given to me. Paul's an apostle. Paul has abilities that are incredible. I look at Paul and sometimes I marvel at his inner abilities, the things he could do, the things that weren't given to him by grace, the things that weren't given to him except by his own natural abilities. And yet all Paul can say is, it's the grace. God gave grace to me. He made me what I am. To everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. That was Nebuchadnezzar's problem. That was the 12's problem. We're going to see at the foot washing in a week or so, we're going to see where Jesus, it said of Jesus, he knew he had come from God and he was going back to God. He knew that God had given all things into his hand. He knew that within a few months, he was going to be King of kings and Lord of lords, sitting at the right hand of God, ruling the nations with a scepter of iron, eternal, with power beyond anything we can comprehend. And yet, he rose from the supper, he took the towel, he began to wash the disciples' feet in order to give us a proper understanding of what our abilities are actually designed to do. So when Paul goes on to say, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. Now, I've worked with that idea of a measure of faith for many years because it's essentially the idea that God has given us a means to measure out our faith. Now, I think Hebrews 11 gives us the opportunity. Let me see, where is it? There it is, right? Whoops, sorry. The very last point there. Each of us has been given our gifts as all of those in Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Noah built an ark. Where did he get the ability to build an ark? Why did he need to build the ark? God dealt that to him. In his generation, God needed an ark. God created Noah in such a way so that when God said, no, I need you to build an ark, Noah said, well, I can do that. Didn't make him great, it gave him a way to measure out his faith. Same thing with Abraham. Same thing with Moses. Same thing with every person we read about in the Old Testament, everybody we read about in the New Testament, and every one of us today. We have all been given, by the grace of God, he's dealt to us the ability to speak well, or the ability to talk to people, or the ability to give or minister, or whatever it is that the apostles were thinking made them great, and whatever it is that might make us feel that we're great. And so every ability, let's take these point at a time, every ability that we might consider our greatness based on, God gave it to us. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar had to learn. I hope we've learned it already. Because God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Humble people see their gifts as a means to serve God and to serve others. Arrogant people see their gifts as a reason why I don't need to serve God and why everyone else should be serving me. And that's why Jesus has to hit on this, because those apostles are going to be worthless to him if they take that view. Because we see this in many of the denominations today. They think that they are so wise and know so much that they can actually take the scriptures and rewrite them, and that God's going to thank them. And that God's going to say, oh my, it's so good that you were born at this time so that you could fix the mistakes I made. That's what they think. The truth about greatness is that as each one has received a gift, there's not one thing that you have or I have or that anyone has that wasn't given at birth or that wasn't given. God put the various elements there so that I could learn how to do this thing that I prize so much. It's a gift. Minister it. You're a servant. Minister it to one another. It's not a reason to be proud and arrogant. It's a reason and an opportunity to show our faith. And it's a reason and an opportunity to serve as good stewards. So what makes people feel greatness makes other people give God the glory. What about you? What about me? If I'm a genius, if I am so handsome that people just drop over as I walk by, and don't worry, that's never happened to me. If I have money, if I have gifts and talents, there's things I can do that no one else can do. I have things I know that no one else knows. I'm the best preacher in the brotherhood. Even if I was, to speak like that. Remember that verse, let another praise thee and not your own lips? But the point is, if we have that ability, it can lead to the pride of life, or if we do what God says here and we use it to serve other people, it takes all the danger out of it. It becomes a powerful ability for us to use instead of a great danger that could lead us to fall. Solomon's wisdom was a great opportunity for him to serve others. And he did when he wrote the Proverbs, when he wrote Ecclesiastes, when he dealt with some of these things. But that wisdom ultimately led him to set aside scripture and brought ruin on himself. As each one has received a gift, I got to figure out what it is. Usually we don't have to figure out what it is. We got a pretty good idea what our gifts are. We got a pretty good idea because they give us self-esteem and they make us sometimes feel like we're better than other people. And so when you see that gift, see it as an opportunity to serve. As a steward, as a good steward of the manifold grace of God. Now the manifold grace of God, of course, is the gospel, but it's also my body. It's also this world. It's also the opportunities that we have to work in this world and be successful. Then in verse 11, if anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him minister or do it with the ability which God supplies. So in both of those circumstances, it's all coming from God. It's God's word, it's God's abilities, so that God may be glorified. So God gave us the gifts. God gave us the words. God gave us the strength. And we see, when we see it as a gift, we are on the threshold of greatness instead of on the threshold of ruin. Pride goes before a fall. God resists the proud. He gives grace to the humble. And the humble are prepared for greatness. So this is an assessment that we all need to be great. That we all need to make. Jesus told his apostles, if you want to be first, if you want to be great, if you want to truly be great, then you need to be last of all. What does it mean to be last of all? What is he asking us to do here? I think as children, we might remember being last of all when it was time to play baseball and we were the last one picked because everybody knew how good we were. Last of all is not a position that anyone wants to be in. But on the other hand, last of all means that I'm willing to take that last position in order to help you get further along. And that's what Jesus did. Jesus was always last of all and servant of all. I marvel sometimes at how he handled, why he didn't get angry, why he didn't get frustrated. Those apostles, I mean, you can think of some pretty descriptive terms. I won't say them because I don't think we're supposed to talk like that. But they were very problematic, let's just use that term. Sometimes they were babies. Sometimes they were proud and arrogant. Sometimes they were just plain rebellious and stubborn. Jesus came to die. Jesus came to serve. He shall be last of all and servant of all. That's how Nebuchadnezzar became great. At the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven. My understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. His greatness was gone. God's greatness was there. The greatest step that we can take in leaving the pride of life and moving to the image and likeness of God is when we see our gifts, our abilities, our the things that make us feel special, and we minister them to other people. We see them as an opportunity to help other people. Of course, Paul goes on in Romans chapter 12 to talk about that. He says that if we have gifts, let's use them. If we can prophesy, then let's prophesy to the best of our ability. Prophecy in the First Corinthian church, or in the Corinthian church, prophecy and tongues were reasons to think you were superior. But in Rome, as he writes to the Romans, he says, this is the means to be a servant of God. So Nebuchadnezzar learned. Well, what about the apostles? Well, they also learned. What about you and I? Have we learned that our gifts, we praise God for them, we see them, we're humbled by them, we realize they weren't given to us to squander on ourselves, they weren't given to us for us to think that we are better than others, they were given to us so that we could use them. And the person who recognizes that, and the sooner they recognize it, the greater they're going to end up being, and the more highly they're going to be praised on the last day, because that's what they did. And that's why Jesus says at the very top there, if you want to be first, if you want God to say, you were a special servant of mine because of your abilities, then what do? You take your abilities and you put yourself in the position of using those abilities to be the greatest slave, to be the last person, to be the person who will see himself as a servant. And brethren, this is really important because our culture, I think that if you were to point out, remember we talked about this a few years ago, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true, wherefore rebuke them sharply. We had a lesson on this. I said, what about Americans? Americans are always What would you put? Are we evil beasts? Are we lazy gluttons? Are we liars? I think the biggest problem with Americans is their pride and their arrogance. Americans think we're the greatest nation there ever was, and we're the greatest people there ever is. And it's the foundation, I think, of a lot of the problems you and I are dealing with today when we try to preach the gospel to people and they don't want to listen. Because they're it. The world revolves around them. And it's hard to be in a culture like that and not to be not to be influenced by it. But the people in the church who desire to be last of all and servant of all, and who see their gifts as the means to serve, they will be great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, it was a convoluted journey to greatness for these people. I don't know if it was a month later, a couple months later, but here comes James and John, the sons of Zebedee. They came to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." Now, whenever a kid comes up and says, "Mommy, will you do something for me?" What's the next question? Well, what do you want? Can't just say yes or no, because I have no idea what you want. But why do they do that? Why do they come up to us and say, "Would you do something that I want you to do?" Well, they're hoping for a blank check so they can, because they really know that what they're about to ask for, they're not going to get. "So, teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask." He said to them, "What do you want me to do?" And they said, "Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory." Now, of course, those of you who remember this passage know that the first thing Jesus said was, "You don't know what you're asking." Because in his glory means after the resurrection. And the ones who were to sit on his right hand and his left hand after the resurrection would have to be chosen from all of the angels and all of the people who had ever lived before them, Moses and Elijah and Noah and Abraham. And these two men are saying, "We want that position." So, why do they ask for that? What is it that they want? Well, they still want to be great. So they wait till Jesus is alone. When the 10 heard it, they were greatly displeased. Why do you think they were displeased? I mean, maybe James and John should be in that position. That'll be up to the Lord. Why get upset about it? Jesus will take care of it. Well, I think the reason was they were still wanting the position themselves. And so they sought the greatness, and the 10 were indignant. Now here's Jesus' answer. He called them all to himself, and he said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them." We have a lot of Nebuchadnezzars in the Senate today. We have a lot of Nebuchadnezzars in the Congress. We have a lot of Nebuchadnezzars in the courts. We have a lot of Nebuchadnezzars in America. Because rulers who lord it over take what they have, like Nebuchadnezzar, "This is mine, this is my glory, my majesty, my city, and I will do whatever I want with it." And that's the way people are today. And so they're not there to serve others. They may go there for that purpose, but pretty soon they know better than everyone else. And they're no longer there. And so that's Jesus' point. You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them. And their great ones exercise authority over them. Yes, that's the pride of life. That's the world that is perishing. So verse 43, "It shall not be so among you. Whoever desires to become great among you shall put you first over themselves." That's going to be the criteria for greatness in the kingdom of heaven. The more I use what I have for you, the greater I become. The more I see my abilities and my greatness as the means to lift other people up, the greater I become. Verse 44, whoever desires to be first shall be slave of all. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone in the Senate and everyone in the Congress actually said, we are here to serve the American people, and every decision we make will be to uplift them and make their lives better? That's how it's supposed to be in the church. Whoever desires to be first will take his abilities, like Jesus did, and use them to be helpful to others. Verse 45, he makes the application. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, who would disagree that the greatest in the kingdom of heaven is Jesus? Jesus is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And we miss the point, though, if we say he's greatest in the kingdom of heaven because he's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven because of his great abilities. No, he's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven because he came to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. If he hadn't given his life for the ransom, there wouldn't be a kingdom of heaven. He'd be up in heaven. He could reign. But he wouldn't have anyone to reign over, because we'd all be lost. And so his sacrifice is what made him great to God and to us. And if Jesus can be in that position, then we need to be in that position. Now, certainly, we don't have the ability to do for others what Jesus had the ability to do. But Jesus was very kind about that. He said, if you just have the opportunity to give a cup of cold water in my name, you won't lose your reward. So, regardless of the gifts, and that's the interesting thing about the way this works, is that the people with the greater gifts actually have the greater responsibility. To whom much is given, much is expected. And as Paul said to the Corinthians, it is acceptable not what a man doesn't have, but what he does have. And so the greater the abilities we have, the more is required of us. And as Paul said, it is required of stewards that a man be found, or a woman be found, faithful. So Jesus compares their conduct first to the Gentiles and then to himself. And so we have to ask that question. Is it my money, or is it the Lord's money that I need to use in the ways that the Lord wants me to use them? Are they my gifts, or are they gifts that God has given to us? So, who would you say at this point in your life you more closely resemble? Is it Jesus? Do we see our abilities as gifts to serve? Do we see our abilities not to make us great, but to humble us? And to make us realize that these gifts, one day I will stand before God and give an account of what I did with them. When Jesus gave the parable of the 10-talent man, the 5-talent man, and the 1-talent man, he says it was based on their abilities. And so if I'm a 10-talent man, that doesn't make me great. It just gives me more responsibilities and obligations. And we don't mind that, but we recognize it. We see the abilities we've given us, or God has given us, as why we will receive greater judgment. Like James said, don't be many of you teachers. A teacher is a very responsible position. But realize this, if you take on that position, you're going to receive a greater judgment, a more difficult judgment. But they still didn't learn it. So now here we are at the Lord's Supper. When he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Likewise, he also took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is a new covenant in my blood. Wouldn't you think at this solemn time, the last thing that people would be thinking about is how great they are? Verse 21, behold, the hand of my betrayer is with me on the table. And truly, the Son of Man goes as has been written or determined, but woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. Then verse 23, they began to question among themselves which of them it was who would do this thing. But they didn't stop there. They go back to the same argument. You know, I missed that verse. I should have put that in there. I guess I didn't put it in there. Right after that, verse 24, I tell you what, I want to read that because I want to make sure. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, in Luke chapter 22, I want to make sure that we get this verse. because it's the hub of my lesson. Luke 22, I think it's in verse 24. Yeah, 23 is, then they began to question among themselves which of them it was who would do this thing. Verse 24, now there was also a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. So right after the Lord's Supper and the revelation that one of them was going to betray Jesus, instead of being humbled, they start arguing. Peter says, I'll never do that because I'm greater than all the rest of you. And John says, well, I'm never going to do it. And I'm greater. I'm greater than Peter. I'm greater than all of you. And they just start arguing about it. Now, I realize it may not have been exactly that way. But it's very clear that they disputed as to which of them would be the greatest. Now, could you imagine a business meeting where we were all discussing some matter and it just degenerated into, well, I'm better than you and I should, my thoughts should be considered here. Well, yeah, but you're not as good as I am. And what kind of Christians would we be if we went in that direction? And yet that's what these people did. They did it on the road and Jesus had to rebuke them in Mark chapter 9. They did it again when James and John tried to become the greatest. And the rest of them were very angry. And the reason I know they did it again is because the same exact answer in all three situations is given. The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. Now, Jesus wouldn't give the same application if he wasn't dealing with the same problem. The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. And those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. Not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he that sits at table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as the one who serves. Now, verse 27 is just a paradox. It's the paradox of the pride of life versus the truth. The pride of life says, verse 27, who is greater? He who sits at the table or he who serves? Well, in the world, it's he who sits at the table. But the truth is, it's the servant. Servant is greater. Because without the servant, there wouldn't be any table. There wouldn't be anyone to enjoy those things. It's not that I'm sitting at the table because I'm so great and you have an obligation to serve me. It's I'm sitting at the table because you're serving me. And so what Jesus is trying to get across, and again, it's just the same thing over and over and over again. What Nebuchadnezzar had to learn, the apostles had to learn. And what the apostles have to learn, many of us have to learn. And that is, our gifts, our abilities that make us feel important do not make us superior. They only give us the opportunity. And in a sense, it'd be better not to have all of those abilities because we have to work harder, have more responsibilities and obligations. It doesn't make us better. So they have to choose. And so do we. Are we going to be like Jesus? Jesus was the greatest. And he was the greatest servant. So, the basic attitude of a servant is formed on a couple of basic premises. The first one is that every good thing given and every perfect gift, whatever it is, remember, if you've received a gift, minister it. What kind of gifts? Intelligence? Charisma? Wealth? Power? It's a gift. Every gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. Now, that's exactly what Paul told the Corinthians. What do you have that you didn't receive? And if you received it as a gift, why do you act like this is mine? This is what makes me superior to you. No, this is what makes me different from you. And that's the whole point of the parts of the body. The eye can't say I'm better because I can see, or the brain can't say I'm better because I can think, or the heart can't say I'm better because The whole life is based on me. God made the heart, he made the brain, he made the eye. And he made them as our servants. And the last thing we need is for one of our servants to start lording it over the rest of the body and causing disruption and problems. Well, the church is the body of Christ, and we're all the individual members. And the whole point of that analogy in Romans chapter 12 is to say this: for by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, and being members one of another, we have gifts that differ. We need to use them. So, gratitude destroys pride. If I'm thankful for what I have, because I know it wasn't for me, it's easier for me to say, this doesn't make me any different from you. And then we get embarrassed when people come up and say, wow, you do great things. Well, no, I don't. I just, God gave me things he didn't give you. It doesn't make me any different from you. We're all the same. We're just servants. We just have different gifts. No one's better than anyone else. No one is anything except those of us who serve. Because if we serve with our abilities, then Jesus says, now I see you as great. So the logical, reasonable, and honorable way is to understand that the only thing that makes us differ from one another is what God gave us. And since he gave it to us, we can't boast. We're nothing special. Whatever I can do is for you, is for God. It's for others, not for me. Doesn't make us special, doesn't make us better, doesn't make us proud and arrogant. It doesn't lead to the pride of life if we see it as an opportunity to serve. And so this lesson is really of critical importance, again, for two reasons. It will keep us from the pride of life, and it will help us to start down the path or see where we are on the path to becoming one of the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And through this series, which we'll be dealing with for a few weeks, we're going to be looking at how this impacts every aspect of our life. And so as we conclude our lesson this evening, I just, as always, ask the question, is there anything about this lesson that you need to do something about right now? You need to come forward and become a Christian, to be baptized into Christ so you can start serving the Lord. Or you need to come forward and pray for God to forgive you of your pride or of your sins so that we can start down this path of greatness. And so as we sing the song of encouragement this evening, if there is anyone in the audience who just been looking for an opportunity to do these things, and this sermon has opened up that door or that bridge, we invite you to come now and take advantage of that opportunity while we now stand and sing.